So before we jump into for today's learning, so those who were here, I think Wednesday, the Lignana Dioma. So today, the Lignana Dioma, but no jokes allowed, okay? Because it's Tubav. So there are many jokes that you could theoretically crack about Tubav, because it's very often called Jewish Valentine's Day and so on and so forth. But we're not going to go there. But it is the subject of one of the most remarkable Mishnayos in all of Shas. Anyone know Mishnah? Anyone know where Mishnayos? Excellent. The very end of this guy, Tractate Tanis. So Mishnah toward the end of Tanis says something absolutely stunning. Where did we go? All right. It says, right, the fourth parak says that there were no right more joyous days. All right. Very famously, what does it say? Right. Jewish calendar, then Yom Kippur and Tuba. That's pretty remarkable. Amram Shimon Gamliel. No more joyous days. The Gemara comes along and says, I understand Yom Kippur and tell us a joyous day. We take it very seriously, but that's we understand why it's such a joyous day. Right? It's the day of Kapara. It's the day of the Luchos Shnios. We're given that. We can understand why Yom Kippur is such a joyous day by the time you're done with the day. Right? Yom Kippur is the highest of the high. Kippur is the most spiritual day of the year. In fact, some people, I know some very outstanding rabbis who have been asked, what is your favorite Jewish holiday? And almost invariably, I've heard the answer be Yom Kippur. People are like, what? A fast day? Are you crazy? But the answer is, right, Yom Kippur actually, if you experience it in a really meaningful way, can be really an incredibly inspiring experience. So I understand Yom Kippur, but too bad, the Gemara says. That's bizarre. So the Gemara, does anyone know how many answers the Gemara gives? There you go. You don't know how many exclusions the Gemara gave for the status, for the joy, the unending joy.
15.
Too bad. Okay, it feels like it's six. Six different explanations. Six different explanations. And there are some unbelievable, all the good Divrei Torah about Tubav are to go through each of the six. Of course, if you're a rabbi, you hold that everything is connected, right? The Parshas HaShavua, it's like give a good drasha. It's because it's all one thing. Right? It's the Mishnah Bechayavos. It's all connected, so they have to all be connected. Many very, very beautiful vortlach about the connection between the six. But one of them is very relevant to what we're doing today. I believe it's the last one quoted the Gemara. The Gemara says something a little bit puzzling. Very last Omud Masechas Tanis. Rabba of Rav Yosef Dar Mitavai. They will say Yom Shepasku Milichros Itzim LaMa'aracha. The day that they ceased, that they completed the process of cutting the wood for the Ma'aracha. What does the Ma'aracha mean? Was that referred to? Itz HaMa'aracha. For the Mizbeach. Right? Apparently, there were these young whippersnappers, could have been all of you guys once upon a time, okay, if you lived just a couple of years ago, would have been sent out into the fields to get lumber and to start cutting it down to size to be used as wood, to be used as fuel on the Mizbeach. And when they finished that process, that was the day when they made a tremendous simcha. So everyone wants to know, huh? Why? Like, what's the great simcha? Because they were tired, because they were exhausted, because it was physically hard labor. They were busy out in the field being Moshe Medvin for a couple of weeks. Like, what was so... That's how Moshe made it in. Shout out. Okay. Right? He was busy as a construction site worker for... right? I'm not sure that I've seen Moshe doing all that much heavy lifting yet, but verify. Why such a source of joy? So the Rashbam is parallel to Gemara and Bavavasa. So one knows that in the later parts of Bavavasa, really after Daf Chavtes or so, it's no longer Rashi. Right? What it says, Khan meets Rashi, and Mikan from here on is?
Not the
Ran. Right? Not the Ran?
His son-in-law.
In Nidorim.
Rashbam.
Now some of the
Rashbam.
It's the Rashbam. It's his grandson, right? It's the Rashbam. And his grandson, the Rashbam, in commentary to Bavavasa, and parallel to Gemara, the Rashbam says, well, I'll tell you why. Tremendous mitzvah that they were accomplishing. In fact, the Rashbam seems to imply, the concept of siyum exists not only for Talmud Torah, but for other mitzvahs as well. That's what it sounds like he's saying. He's saying, they made a big party, it was a sugas mitzvah to celebrate the fact that they completed the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to prepare the wood, at least a hechsher mitzvah, it's a preparation, very important to cut all the wood, it is hard work, it's a big process. So it's a sort of quasi-siyum, that's what they were celebrating, that's what the Rashbam says in Bavasa. But Rashi, grandfather, seems to disagree. Because Rashi on the spot in Tanis says something else. He says as follows. He says, why was it such a simcha? Not because they what they completed, rather because of what they were starting. Because it used to take late days, and the long days of summer, were days of daylight, and the days were still very long, and therefore they had plenty of time to go out and do their work. What did they do when the summer started to come toward an end? And all of a sudden, sunset started to move earlier and earlier. Forget changing the clocks. I don't know if they changed the clocks back in the day, but, right? They didn't have clocks back in the day, okay? So, right, what started happening, though? They had less time of daylight, and they had more time, what? Of dark. And what did that mean at a time when most of the work that you were doing was out in the fields? Right? What did that mean? You just couldn't get your work done. It wasn't like nowadays, right? You couldn't pull out your phone, right? Be tethered 24/7, right? So what did they do? So they had more time that was available for Talmud Torah. That's the celebration. That's what Rashi says. He says, "Mikan ve'ilach mechanisha asar be'av ve'ilach from two be'av and on demosif leilos al hayamim." When all of a sudden, right, you're right around, you're starting to approach the time of the equinox, and you're starting to have the switchover, the amount of hours of day and night. Says Rashi. So around that time, he explains, "La they had time lasuk ba'Torah." Right, Yosef Chaim al Chaim. He says that someone who's able to had this time was able to study increasing amounts of Torah, and that, says Rashi, was the source of the celebration. So it wasn't because of the mitzvah they had completed, says Rashi, but the mitzvah that they now have the opportunity to complete. So in many ways, right, sometimes we think of the summer, maybe we have more time, but in a way, actually, God willing, all of us next year will have an opportunity, significant opportunities, to engage in Talmud Torah. And in a way, we're now starting to transition. Tu B'Av enters the Yom Noraim. Tu B'Av really starts to take us, and it starts us off with Talmud Torah. It's the beginning of a process, an opportunity. So while it's true that the advent of electricity has fundamentally changed some of the dynamics at play, and the nature of the workforce and the things that we spend our days doing has changed considerably from the time of Chazal and time of the Sugya, nonetheless, the idea that Tu B'Av is a celebration of the renewed opportunity for Talmud Torah is, I think, a very beautiful and relevant lesson, and I think today is a beautiful day to continue our learning and to continue pushing ahead. So that was very appropriate for today. On that note, let's learn a little bit more of Inyanei Sukkah. Those who are fresh on the Sukkah boat, and those who have been here. Either way, so just very quickly to catch everyone up, one of the points that we had made over the course of previous Shiurim is that we very often make the mitzvah of incorrectly defining the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah. If I were to ask you, when we think of dwelling in a sukkah, living in the sukkah, what do we mostly think of? And why might that be?
Eating food,
right? Yeah, usually we think of of eating. Why?
Because we have meals in the sukkah.
Okay, good. So first of all, that's something that is halachically obligatory, is to eat a certain amount of meals in the sukkah. We'll talk about the first night at some point. So kind of why?
Well, most people find limited, like restricting about the holiday.
Okay, so it's on our mind because it's in, right? For some people, it could even be annoying or be a, right? It could be a burden. They look at it in a negative kind of way. To flip that around. Yeah, Viv?
I think of sleeping. Living means...
You think of... Oh, so we're going to talk about this. What does it mean to live somewhere? What does it mean to live somewhere? Maybe it means to sleep there. Maybe that's what we associate. But I think most people generally associate it with eating. But there's another reason it wasn't mentioned. Just connected to what you said.
It's like your house.
Okay. When do we say bracha? Right? You ever make a bracha before you go to sleep in the sukkah? You ever make a bracha before you go in the sukkah? Right before you go do anything other than dine in the sukkah? Yeah. Right, and even then, only certain foods and so on and so forth. But wait a second. The Gemara says explicitly it's not enough to eat and drink in the sukkah. Right? The Gemara says you have to sleep in the sukkah. The Gemara says you should really be mitayel the sukkah. You should go and just spend some time there. Right? You should learn in the sukkah. You ever seen anyone say a bracha before they crack open and say first? Baruch Ata Hashem Elokeinu Melech Haolam Shekach Shem Zivanu Leishei B'Sukkah Zok Heilig Rashi. Right? You see someone does that, right? Crack open and say, you think that they're crazy. Right? What are you doing? You're not eating a meal. So what could that person respond?
I'm living in the sukkah.
Leishei B'Sukkah. This is what I do. You want me to do something else with my time? Waste my time? Fine. By the way, you guys should just know, I found over Shabbos learning some of these topics a little bit more, and I found two amazing things. First of all, it's an incredible Beis Yosef. So just to go back, just to make sure everyone knows the Gemara. The Gemara says that there are two kinds of learning. There's sort of like really, really intense learning, and there's less intense learning. There's a distinction between those two in terms of sitting in the sukkah. So what's the difference? So Rashi and most Rishonim say that what the Gemara means is if it's a really intense analysis that's necessary, the sukkah might be distracting. So for that, you're allowed to go into your homes. It's really, really beyond so that you can already go back inside so that you can really focus on it. But if it's a more accessible kind of learning, so that you should do in the sukkah. So I just saw that the Ran disagrees. He says, no, Pshat, the Gemara is just the opposite. He says, what has to take place in the sukkah? Something that's really kavua. He says, there's nothing more kavua than learning something really in depth. He says, that's the most sort of permanent kind of Talmud Torah that we can engage in. He says, that's what must take place in the sukkah. It's a beautiful Ran. It's a keeper. Very nice. The other thing I saw is that even shmoozing should take place in the sukkah. How do I know? Because the Derech Moshe says so. That's the Ramah Sefer on the commentary on the tour. Darchi Moshe says, Moshe Yisrael says, he says, also not only learning, he says, Shmuos Ra'os. Shmuos Ra'os. I kid you not. What does that mean?
I had to.
What? Lashon Hara. He's not Chas Chalila recommending that you say Lashon Hara. But if you're going to say Lashon Hara, if you already have a minute, you're saying Lashon Hara, at least you should do it in the sukkah. He's not Chas Shalom justifying it. But the point is, right?
Lashon Hara, not bad news.
What? Oh, I don't think it's what it. It's just not what it sounds like. I think it's just trying to say that it's. I'm also the language that I'm using might be slightly imprecise. Shmuel uses. I forget the other word. I think it's Russell, but right. Sometimes it's bad tidings, but I think I'm slightly misquoting it. So we can look back. But either way, I think the point though is that not Chas V'Chelila to recommend such actions. But the point is, you live in the sukkah. So we very often associate then, this is really what I'm driving at, we associate the mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah very often with a discrete action, right? Achila ushtia, I think most people, right? Aviv says sleeping in the sukkah. But we know from the Gemara that it's much broader than that. But this, of course, raises some basic questions. So why is it that we don't say yeshiva b'sukkah every time you enter into a sukkah? And maybe we should. Right? After all, if the essence is living in the sukkah, so then why specifically an achila ushtia? And does everyone, how do we know that that's the case? Does it say in the pasuk somewhere? You say the bracha l'sheva sukkah only when you're eating in a sukkah. Right? Unlikely, right? Because it doesn't talk about right? Right? That's not explicit in Chumash. So where does that come from? Is there Gemara?
Because you're saying Gemara anyway before you're saying a bracha anyway before you eat food. Okay. Maybe you can say Leishiv Asuka before you say Birkas Asora. Is that because he's saying a bracha anyway, so you might as well say Leishiv Asuka.
Yeah, I'll give you it right. Maybe you should say it immediately before you walk into the sukkah. That's what I would think. Right? Leishiv Asuka. Well, you can't do anything with sukkah. If everything is Leishiv Asuka, right? If just walking into my sukkah because it's my dira sarai, it's my home for the week, then I should maybe make a bracha every time I walk into the sukkah. Forget sleeping, forget eating, I walk in to use it. I'm fulfilling the mitzvah, right?
It's definitely a special din by eating and drinking. I just can't identify the din.
Can't identify the din.
I just can't think of it.
Okay. If you're going to say to me, the Gemara is going to have to say this in subsequent days, the Gemara says explicitly that if you have a certain kind of food, right, if you have what's called the quote-unquote achilas keva, yeah, I'll figure out what that is, it's usher to have that outside the sukkah. So you see that that's more severe.
Yeah, that's it.
Okay, no one said that it's usher to learn outside the sukkah. I said, you should, right? Even, right, it's not, no one's saying that you're obligated halachically, that you're in violation of an Isur d'oraisa if you schmooze in the Beit Midrash instead of schmoozing in your sukkah. That's nonsense. Right? We know that there are certain actions that must take place in sukkah. So that's a very legitimate point. But the only thing is I would push back and say, there's something else you have to do in the sukkah. The Gemara says explicitly, that's usher to do outside the sukkah. What's that? You said it? Yeah, it's explicitly. Not only that, the Gemara goes even further. The Gemara says, when it comes to a su'udah, there's a distinction between a permanent meal and an impermanent meal. Between a su'udah keva and a su'udah sarai. So a keva, however we define that, must take place in the sukkah. Su'udah sarai does not need to take place in the sukkah. What about sleeping? According to the din of the Gemara, this is a very difficult halacha to have to learn. Put it on me.
It's passive.
What? No, what's the halacha?
Can you
take a cat nap? Maybe for a few seconds. But Shina Sarai, the Gemara says explicitly, is usher outside of the sukkah. Right now, there might be kulos and so on and so forth. I'm not giving halacha l'maisa here, but that's what the Gemara says in principle. So if we're going to say that, right, and Aviv, I think you had a good point, wait, eating is a little different. But wait a second, which of these is more strict? And you're going to see that we should make this very point. Which of these is more strict? This is more demanding? Eating or sleeping? Right, sleeping. So if that's the case, and if anything should require bracha, kavachomer, right? If you're going to say eating should, okay, then kavachomer sleeping should. Yeah, it's not what we do. Where does that come from? Where does this all go? Okay, so these are the questions we have to look at. So I gave you a couple sources that are pertinent to this, and I'm going to look through this. So first of all, I gave you the pasuk in Parsha Zemor. Basukot tishvu shvasimim kol ha'ezrach miYisrael yishvu basukos. And we said, how do you define teshvu? What does that mean? Alright, so we said it doesn't just mean to sit, although there's a shita on the Rishonim, and the Rambam actually seems to hold this way. There's an amazing shita. The Rambam says you should make a bracha of lishiv basukah. Let's say you're making Kiddush. You should dafka be standing when you're saying Kiddush, and you say the bracha of lishiv basukah. Why? Because what's the principle when it comes to a birchas mitzvah? When do we have to say it? What's the controlling principle about the proper timing of a birchas mitzvah? Anyone know?
Before we do it.
Good, excellent. What's the Gemara's terminology for that? Before you do it?
Over l'asiasan.
What?
Over l'asiasan.
Excellent. Okay. Believe me, it says over l'asiasan. So the Rambam says, you know what over l'asiasan means? While you're standing. Because what's the mitzvah?
Sit.
That's a remarkable sheet of the Rambam. But it's not the pashtus. The pashtus is that the mitzvah of yeshiva, as we've said, is living in the sukkah. So as kos yeshu shavasim goes, that we saw yeshu basikos. And similarly, parshas rei, chagas kos ta'asel l'chos shivas yomim. You should make the holiday of sukkah. So I'm going to have to come back to this. Okay. So then I gave you Gemara, those who have been here have already seen. This is the Gemara that says that Kol Shivas, the Mishnah and the Gemara, and Chavchas and Beis, Kol Shivas Ayom Yalazam, Osis, Akaso, Keva, Viso, Ra, you make your sukkah permanent and your home temporary, and then it teaches you about the halachos of the rain, and then everything should be in the sukkah, and that's a brisa, and so on and so forth. The Rambam in source 4, and this is Perek Vav of Hilchos, really Hilchos Sukkah Velulav, Shofar Sukkah Velulav, Perek Vav Halacha. Hey, Kitzad Hi Mitzvah Hayeshiva Basukah. He says, right, despite the other points of the Rambam, it's a different halacha. Here he says the more general description: Shea Ochel V'Shoseh V'Dar Basukah Kol Shivas Hayamim Beim BaYomu Veim BaLayla Kiderach Shudar BeVeso B'Shar Yivos Hashanah. If you're living in the sukkah, it's your new home, says the Rambam. Your home, right, becomes a switcheroo, right? It's a trade, right? Your home becomes temporary, and your sukkah becomes permanent. Says that's again, that becomes your home, as we've seen. And he says you bring the nice kelim into the sukkah. This is based on the sukkos and the Gemara, and so on and so forth. Okay, so that really establishes the general background, basically the fundamental principle that we've seen. And we asked then, if that's the case, so then how does that reflect itself? How does that play itself out halachically? Right? What's the nafkamina, for example, when it comes to, or is there a nafkamina of that principle when it comes to the recitation of the bracha? When do we recite a bracha, and how are we to understand that? So this becomes a major discussion, and I would suggest today in Machlokas HaRishonim, and it's based in part on a sugya a little bit later on in Sefer Sukkah. So take a look at source 5. Mem vav manav tana rabban osa sukkah la'atzmo. If you make a sukkah for yourself, what do you say? Omer baruch shechiyanu v'chula. Okay, you make a bracha shechiyanu v'himan v'yon la'azman hazeh. By the way, there's a Yushalmi that says something absolutely shocking. And it's made this Yushalmi famous. The Yushalmi says that what bracha do you make if you construct a sukkah? Not Shechianu Kimanu Yom Lazman Hazeh, but rather you say what? Yeah, well, it doesn't quite right. It says Leishe Basukah, but it says you say the Berachas Hamitzvah. Shevisham Sav Tzivanu Leishe Basukah. Seemingly, Pashup Shan Yushalmi a week before Sukkot. Before Yom Kippur, and you're already saying the bracha, Shikasham Savitzion Leishe Basukah. It's a shocking position in the Mitziv. Okay, and it's very relevant for Kiddushin. Well, we did this, right? Okay, so the Mitziv says, his explanation is as follows. He says there's a notion called a Hesher Mitzvah HaKasav B'Kosh, almost in Tziv. It's one of your top 10 famous Mitzivs. Okay? Everyone has their top, you have your, right? Your top 10 Pivoted. Civ list, okay, it's going right up there. I'll let you decide, you know, where exactly you want to rank it. But I'm sure you have your list, and it's going to go right up there somewhere toward the top. Says the Nitziv something unbelievable. There's a new category of mitzvah. What's the new category of the mitzvah? A preparation for a mitzvah that is written in the Torah. Usually we have a category of a mitzvah, and we have a category of a heksher mitzvah. Two separate categories. The Nitziv says, sometimes there is a heksher mitzvah, i.e. an act that is preparatory for a mitzvah, that has a unique status. So what's a regular heksher mitzvah? Give me an example of a classic heksher mitzvah. Sometimes it's hard to think in such general terms. Tzitzit. Oh, that's interesting. I'm not sure that's necessarily what the last one was trying to indicate, though. We're in the same. Definitely the parasha of tzitzis.
If you're wearing a t-shirt, you're not chayav in tzitzis.
Because it's a mitzvah QV.
Hey, think about what Rabbi Wasserman does during his spare time. He does this for me, also.
It's called time.
Okay? Time to okay? By the way, if you, another day I can try to convince you to buy Tchelas, and I can try to convince you to get to Rabbi Wasserman to help you out. Tiger Tchelas. Because I have excellent experience on that score. So, go to Rambam, at least.
They don't come out.
What?
They don't come out.
They're very good. And then we get the, what do we use at the end?
The nail polish.
Not the remover, though. Clear nail polish. So if you're wondering why Rabbi Sinensky is ever walking into like a CVS or the like, Walgreens rather, and looking to purchase clear nail polish.
If you want to use,
okay, and you think that might sound a little bit strange, okay, now you'll know why. What?
You use crazily if you want it to be
Manish.
I use nail polish.
Oh, yeah. That's why I don't say young children.
It comes off.
You can't tuck it into your pants, or else it like hurts.
With
it
not
scratches
with
your legs. It's failure, yeah. I have nail polish on.
Really?
Yeah, I can, yeah.
It's just a tiny bit.
That's why. That's, what? That's why you
like dunked it.
But you have Tchelas? You don't have it on this one.
You
have this one.
Another pair.
Okay, good. That's why I tie mine around my belt. It's Star Pater Manat Chilas, a new halacha. You're already here first. Shkoyach. Okay. All right, so Hekshar Mitzvah, so possibly tying. Oh, that, by the way, tying has a certain elevated halachic status as well. It's on sound. Right, and you have, it might be parallel. There might be some similarities. Look at there, actually. Okay, I'll give you the classic example in Gemara, for instance, is sharpening the Mila knife. It's a classic example in Masechet Shabbos, and there's some question. Well, we know that Mila Bismana is Docha Shabbos, so let's say you have to have a bris, and you don't have the Mila knife. And the only way to get the Mila knife there is by carrying through Rishus Rabbah. So you know that Mila is Docha Shabbos, or Machshirei Mila Docha Shabbos, a classic machlokas among the Tanoim, where Ezra holds that Machshirei Mitzvah, or Machshirei Mila Docha Shabbos, and the Chachamim disagree. That's a classic question, but that's the general notion of a heksher mitzvah. So you have a mitzvah and you have a heksher mitzvah. Comes along the Nitziv and says there's such a thing called a heksher mitzvah kosuk b'kro. A heksher mitzvah that has unique status. So comes along the Nitziv and he comments on one of the classic perushim, or classic compendiums of the mitzvos, called the She'iltos. You guys familiar with the She'iltos? Mm-hmm. Familiar Sefer? She'iltos. Who wrote the She'iltos? Anyone know?
Yeah.
What? One of the Gaonim. Rav, anyone know? Rav, no? Less famous than Rav Sadia Gaon. New? Remember?
Listen.
No. Right. Rav Achoy Gaon. Rav Achoy Gaon wrote a classic sefer. Now, he is made most famous by the Nitziv, because the Nitziv wrote a commentary. And the Nitziv wrote a commentary made it very famous. And everyone learned the She'iltos, because he had the commentary of the Nitziv written on the spot, even though he wrote it about 1,000 years later. Anyhow, so the She'iltos starts off his discussion, the mitzvah of sukkah, by saying that in Aramaic, that there's a mitzvah to construct a sukkah. That's a very strange thing to say. As l'chura, the primary mitzvah is what? It's not to construct the sukkah, but rather to sit, lay shape a sukkah. It goes teishvu, shiva semim. You know what pasuk quotes in support of that? The She'iltos? Says, so what's Pratan Tassel? Not making a nice holiday. It means constructing a sukkah. The Torah is telling you, Heksher Mitzvah, Kosu the Krah. His unique status is, what's the nafkamina? What's the practical ramification according to the Netziv? He says, mitzvah bo yoser mi bishlucho, you should do it yourself. The Gemara in Kiddushin says you should marry someone yourself, ideally, instead of sending a shaliach. Okay? Lech lemaisa. Okay, now you guys know. Okay, more practical. You should, okay, you should prepare for Shabbos, right, on your own. The Gemara only says it by two mitzvahs. Says the Netziv, where the Torah says something explicitly, you should perform a hechsher mitzvah, that's where it applies. So he says that applies by Kiddushin, it applies by Chinus Asher Yaviyu. He says in the Torah you should prepare for Shabbos by going and collecting the mun, the double portion, so that's preparation for Shabbos. Similarly, he says in the Netziv that it says Chag, goes to Aselecha, so it comes along Shildos and says the hechsher mitzvah kasur. That's unique status. Why do, yeah, Rabbi Wasserman?
I'm asking for who can build them, potentially.
Oh, so good, yeah. And another nafkamina of the Netziv is he says there's halacha of tasev elo min ha'asui, that the sukkah should not just be raided or by someone, anyone who's not a bar chiyuva, he says, right? Sukkah skanvuch, the Gemara talks about. So he says, yeah, this halacha of tasev elo min ha'asui, which comes up by tzitzis and by the sukkah, he suggests also is a an outgrowth of the concept of heksher mitzvah sukkah. Correct. Okay. Anyhow, the reason I mention that is because this Yushalmi, which is against the Bavli here in source number 5 in the Gemara and Daf and Vav and Aleph, also is going to go to this larger discussion about what is the nature of the mitzvah of Yeshiva Basukah writ large. Because what we've seen is not just a Maisa Achila, right? It's not just about eating, it's about living. And apparently, maybe it's not just about living, but it's sort of even broader than that. It's building and living. What does that mean? How do we understand the nature of this larger mitzvah? That becomes our mystery. Okay, but either way, if it's true that the mitzvah is broader than just achila ushtia or even sleeping, even shena, right? So then maybe you should make the bracha on it. So Gemara says here that ha'osa sukkah var shechiyanu, and that's where Yerushalmi disagrees. Says the Bavli, nichas leishiva, if you enter to sit, to dwell, to live in the sukkah, omer baruch hashem shem tzav zivanu, right? Leishiva sukkah, that bracha. And then it talks about some additional details, if you have to mechadish padavar, and so on and so forth, goes to the tasavu and asli discussion, etc. But what's the language of the Gemara? Nichnas leishiv ba. How do you understand that? Nichnas leishiv ba. When do you make the bracha? Under what circumstances?
Upon entrance.
Nichnas leishiv. What does it mean, leishiv basukah? I mean, the Gemara is just echoing the language of the bracha, so it's hard to prove too much from this. But based on the Pashup Shah of the Gemara, what would you think? Does it mean when you go to eat in the sukkah, when you go to sleep in the sukkah, when you go to sit physically sit down in a chair in the sukkah?
Physically sit down in a chair.
Maybe. By the way, they didn't have chairs in all situations. Like with the Rambam cited this, the Rambam didn't have chairs. In general, there were chairs that existed, but you had to be like in the Sultan's palace or something. They didn't generally have chairs in Arabic countries. The Rambam says when you do tachanun and you do shachavaya, you go and you bow down. That's tachanun for the Rambam. They didn't have chairs. So I'm careful for sitting where? Maybe sitting on the floor outside in the sukkah? Maybe. Maybe it means literally sitting on the floor. It's possible. It's leishiv. Not so clear. Is it possible that nichnas leishiva means not when you go to eat or even sit in a chair, but it means anytime you go to dwell in the sukkah, meaning writ large, right? If that's the mitzvah is much broader, then maybe that should be the case. So number achronim come along and they suggest that that might also be the shita of the riff, although it's hard to know here for sure as well. Vasikna decholsha shenichnas leishiva mevarich leishiva sukkah. Again, it's hard to know for sure, but it's just kind of echoing the language of the Gemara, but is the pashos of the Gemara, is the pashos of the Rif anytime you eat, or is it broader? Meaning, is it possible that the pashos of the Gemara and that the shita of the Rif hold, is that what? They actually make the bracha when?
Every
time you come to use, to quote unquote, live in the sukkah. But that's not the accepted halacha, as we know. The Mechaber Paskins, I give it to you, Shulchan Aruch here, in Tofresh Lamites He, Aches rather, what is he saying? Nagu, what's the common practice? Shei Mevarchan al sukkah l'bishas achila. V'achinog, right? What's the common practice?
Eating.
Right, when you're eating, where does this come from? So the answer is it comes from a classic dispute in the Rush, which he quotes in two places, which is too long, no time for Seder today. So I'm not going to read it all inside. You can take a look on your own. Basically, the Rush, both in Brachos, Perak Aleph, Halacha Gimel, and in Sukkah, Perak Dalet, Halacha, Simen Gimel, quotes a classic dispute between the Ri and Rabbeinu Tam. The common denominator between the Ri and the Rabbeinu Tam is that they both hold that we only make a bracha when we eat in the sukkah. right? And that's the generally accepted practice, they say. But the question is, they just observed that was the minhag. The question is why? So they have a machlokas about this. Right? Why would that be? And the Ri actually makes the point of it. This is what we were talking about before. He makes your point. He says, what about Shena? And he makes the point they were making earlier. He says, wait a second. The Gemara says if you have a Sudas Kema, you have to eat in the Sukkah. But if you have a Sudas Shena's Arai, even then you have to sleep in Sukkah. So which is more Hamor? Which is more significant? Apparently sleeping. So why is this irony? It's backwards. Vachochu. They make the bracha on eating and not on sleeping. It's a question. And the Ri. Says Machlokes between Ri and Rabbi Yehoshua, how to justify this. What?
I like my question a lot.
It's very sharp. So what might be the difference? What do you think? Let's chat. Why is it backwards? What's different? So comes along the Ri, and the Ri says like this. The Ri says, Pshat is that sleep is less in your control than is eating. Does he ever try to fall asleep and not succeed? You ever try to eat and not succeed? Very rare. Very, very rare. Okay. Can happen. But clearly, it's much more under our control. And she says, therefore, fundamentally, says the Ri, that sleeping also should have had a bracha, elamai. Right? Says, maybe you won't fall asleep. All right, so if you take a look on that page, it's page 3, it says, third line, V'haya Ri rotze lomar, top section, T'hadim v'arch nal shena haini mishon, T'shema lo yuchal lishan, G'shin nirdam. And therefore, B'shena yinu achal v'chal.
V'chal v'tala v'chim.
Yes, concern for v'chal v'tala. Exactly right. By the way, there are some rishonim, for example, who hold that this applies elsewhere, right? And achronim as well. So, for example, the bracha of Hamatil, right? Rav Salvichik's grandfather, Chaim, and others did not say the bracha of Hamatil. It's chashash bracha levatal. May not fall asleep. Says the Rambam that's bothering you, keeps you up all night. What are you going to do? Right? This is Rav Chaim. So he's learning Rambam. I'm trying to figure out Pshat. Stay up all night. So there were some who said, and you have this in Rishonim already, in other contexts. The Ravid says, for example, he says, any time it requires an act of Nesina, where someone else has to receive something, you can't make a bracha. So some Rishonim say, that's why you can't make a bracha, for example, on Mishlach Manos, because maybe someone won't accept them. Ramatanos Avionim, someone might not receive it. Right, others say, on Kiddushin, Tabas. Right, you can give the ring, and she could theoretically decline it. She may not accept it. The Ravid says, therefore, we don't make that. So machlokas, we don't pasuk in that way. But the Ravid says, therefore, you don't say a berchas hamitzvah on that act. Right? So that's the. So you have this. You have this idea in the Rishonim. So that's the reason that that's.
So those who hold that it's more of like a maaseh oriented thing, and therefore you would say bracha.
That lungus, you can say, it's hard to say that by Hidushin. It's harder to say that here, but you can say it, for example, by Purim. So say, for example, let's say someone is mochel. And someone, you try to give shachmanas, so they're like, no, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm done. I'm got it. Were you mekayim the mitzvah? So Zashita is a big machlokas about this, but there's Zashita that holds that it's only on the nosi, not in the mekavah. Because the idea is to try to share good spirit. So if I tried to give it to you, and you were mochel, there's a discussion in the Ramah. It's some machlokas among the Rishonim and Achronim about this. So that could be. So there, that, yeah, that one is. It could be totally on that. So that's the Shita of the Ri. Rabbi Nutam disagrees. What does Rabbi Nutam say? So Rabbi Nutam says something fascinating. He says, Avar Rabbi Nutam Yeshivlo, Shef, fourth line, Shekol mitzvah sukkah shechayav adam yisudu l'suda kigon shena v'til v'shino. He says, all the actions of living in the sukkah, such as sleeping and taking a trip and learning, birchas leishev v'sukkah shebirech al ha-se'uda putarto milivarech aleihan. What's the Rabbi Nutam's Pshat? Says, why do we disagree with maybe the Rif? Why do we disagree with the Rishonim who hold that you always make a bracha? Why do we only say it on eating? Not because sleeping you might not fall asleep, but rather what? The bracha on eating encompasses everything else. Right? That's the Chesher B'Nita. So the fundamental machlokas is like this. According to the Ri, right, really we would not say a bracha on Shena because maybe we won't fall asleep. Rabbeinu Tam says, no, fundamentally we do require on sleeping as well. It's just that the su'uda encompasses everything else. Why? But again, it begs the question, why the su'uda? So we don't have time to get into it too much, but if you take a look at source number 9, I think what Rabbi Nitam is saying there is he's saying that there's something more kavua about the act of eating than the act of sleeping. There's something more halachically defined. Right? In other words, to say a birchas hamitzvah, it has to be in a concrete action. It can't just be kind of porech bavir. It can't just be floating there. Yeah. It's being concrete. Eating is considered to be sort of, there's something very defined that happens in a way that sleeping, somehow, are you doing anything? Are you not doing anything? Is sleeping active? Is it passive? Can you make a bracha on sleeping? Are you doing anything? Or are you just not doing anything by falling asleep? What's pshat falling asleep? Are you falling? You're throwing yourself into sleep? Or are you just doing nothing and therefore just memela, you're sleeping? It's a good chakira.
But Ben Atama also agree that it's also possible that there, along the lines of the reasoning that you may not fall asleep. It doesn't seem to reject that reasoning basis. It's not about that. Like, do you think you would kind of include that in his...
Not falling, sorry.
Would Ben Atama also say that it's a problem if you don't fall asleep? Because it's also passive, and it's like, is that part of like the reason? Can you attribute that reasoning to Ben Atama?
Oh.
It's not relevant because you don't have to make a bracha anyway.
Right. Exactly. Right. The question is, though, right, just to press the point. So again, just to summarize, in two basic shitos, right, the common shita in the common practice is only to make a bracha on eating, but perhaps the pashas in the Gemara and the Rif is that you make a bracha on any significant action. If it's only on eating, the question becomes why, especially given the Shina problem, you have the machlokas between the Ri and the Rif, according to the Ri, really, it would require a bracha, but where the concern might fall asleep, bracha vatel, etc. According to Rabbi Natam, actually, there is fundamentally a requirement of a bracha on Shina, but it's encompassed by achila as well, and we're suggesting that maybe achila somehow has more kavua, right, and so on and so forth. And by the way, we're not going to have time to get into it now, but there are parallel discussions in other areas of halacha. Give an example here, the Vilna Gaon thinks that this question affects also whether you have to put out the 10 little pieces of bread during Bedikas Chametz, right? This sort of goes, Aviv Khan goes, Yer Chakira. Is it a din in finding the bread, or is it a din just the process itself, searching for the bread? So the Vilna Gaon suggests that as well. However, right, so that's a little bit of a sign. You can take a look at the Gra basically connecting the Machaber and the Ramah by Vidikas Chametz back to the Ri and Rabbi Nutan. He says the same Machokas, if you hold like the Ri by us, so then similarly, you'd have to be concerned for Bracha Latal, you have to put it out. But if you hold like Rabbi Nitam by us, so then you don't have to worry about it. Just like Rabbi Nitam says, you don't have to worry about this whole bracha vatala sleeping thing, so too he would agree there as well, that you just do your search and you're good to go. Okay, so that's what he says here. Now, just to add to this, though, according to what we've said now, fundamentally, the bracha certainly applies to sleeping. You would include sleeping as well. And what was right, it's just that in practice, for one reason or another, we don't do that, right? But either you would, but there's a concern bracha latala, or, right, or actually you do, and it's just included in the meal, right? And by the way, what was the language of Rabbi Nutam? He said not just sleeping, he said what else? He said, right, he said learning, and he said being the tile of the sukkah, and so on and so forth. So just to press the point further, let me ask you the following question. Let's say someone was on doctor's orders not to eat. Just not hungry, not eating today. What's the halacha? What do you think? Make a bracha on sleeping in the sukkah? Make a bracha on learning in the sukkah? Make a bracha. Right? Fascinating. Meaning, even according to us who hold that practically speaking, most of the time we only make a bracha on eating, nonetheless, you can imagine a scenario in which what? Maybe you have to make a bracha even when you're not eating in the sukkah. At least if you're not eating, so you have nothing to include everything else. And in fact, I didn't make this up. Rav Hai Gaon, right? Talking about Gaonim, another one of the great Gaonim, right? Rav Hai Gaon actually paskens this way. It's back in that rush. Again, we're late on time. It's not going to read inside or going through in too much, but I'll show it to you. It's 5 lines from the bottom of the previous page. Rav Hai Gaon Kasav, very quickly, just this line. Hanichnas b'sukas chaveiro levakro. He's talking about a different case, but similar to this. Is he going to visit someone else? What's the halacha? And he says, minhag yadua shi yivarich bin saad bin lo saad. Why? Saying like this. He's saying, if you own your own sukkah, presumably at some point over Yontif, if you're going to eat, and probably from the beginning, you're going to eat your sukkah. You're going to say Leish Shabbat sukkah. So the Leish Shabbat sukkah is saying your own sukkah encompasses everything you do your own sukkah. So you're not going to say it on sleeping there, or even on visiting, because it's all encompassed in the same Rabbi Nutam's big bracha on eating that includes everything else. What happens if it's a new sukkah? It's a new Chefza Shel Mitzvah. What's the halacha? So says Rav Haigon, as soon as you walk in to visit your friend, you go say hi, a new bracha. Again, we don't generally paskin this way, but it gives you a sense as to the broadening of the nature of the mitzvah. We tend to think of it like this, and it's because of Rabbeinu Tam and the Reed. But I'm saying that it's a far broader mitzvah, and that carries itself, that bears itself out in the halachic evidence. Number one, there's a sheet in the Rishon that we say the bracha anytime we walk into the sukkah. Number two, there's reason to think, even the Reed and Rabbeinu Tam struggle with this, and according to Rabbeinu Tam, you can imagine a scenario in principle where we make a bracha, not just on eating, but even on something broader. And indeed, Rav Haigon paskens exactly this way. So again, that's not the common minhag nowadays, but I think we're kind of a little bit biased in terms of the nature of the mitzvah, and I think that there's something much broader that's happening. Now, how do we understand what exactly is happening? So I'm going to skip a little bit. I'll just explain to you what I gave you here, and then I'm going to share one vort. This is a new chiddush. Last time I gave you an old chiddush. It's a new chiddush, and you'll tell me if you think it's MS or you think it's not MS. It's kind of food for thought. I'm just starting to think about it. Let me tell you what you have over here if you want to look and be ma'ayin further. I give the Minchas Chinuch. The Minchas Chinuch is very relevant to our discussion. The bottom page 4, source 13. And the Minchas Chinuch talks about two mitzvahs. He says the fundamental difference between a mitzvah like tzitzis and a mitzvah like eating matzah on the first night of Pesach. He says when it comes to tzitzis, is that a fully obligatory mitzvah?
Cute meat.
Right? In a way. He doesn't use exactly that language, but he says there's one category of a mitzvah that if you're in a particular scenario, you're obligated to do it. Are you always obligated? Right? Even a male is over a bar mitzvah. Are you always obligated, technically speaking, the mitzvah of tzitzis? It's not good, not to where you shouldn't. The Gemara says you shouldn't try to circumvent the mitzvah, but fundamentally, you're only chayv when you're already wearing a beged of arba kanfos, as opposed to other mitzvahs where you have to put on tefillin every day. It's not like, oh, if X, Y, Z. No, it's a mitzvah of tefillin, it's a mitzvah of tefillah, it's a mitzvah of Talmud Torah under all circumstances. How much, and so on and so forth, fine, but you have to do it. It's not contingent upon any outside factor. So he wants to know, what is the status of sukkah? It's a very interesting discussion, and it gets into this question, how do you see the mitzvah of sukkah? Is it more of like we were saying earlier, that there's an iser not to eat in the sukkah, except, right, you have to, in other words, you're in violation of an iser if you're in the sukkah and you don't eat it in certain circumstances, or is it more of a positive kiyum? So there's more to say about that, but I think we're going to have time to get into that. Okay, so here's a little bit of my chiddush, and hopefully I have more time to develop it another time. So here's what I want to say. Pulling together everything that we've seen. What was that? The two psukim of the mitzvah. It's a mitzvah, clearly, vishiv psukah. Chag sukkos yishuvai. That's right, basukos yishuvasimim. Kol azrach v'yisrael yishuv basukos. Fine. And then there's chag sukkos ta'aseh lecha. And you have the Yerushalmi and the She'iltos. And then it's if. And they're all saying, it's not even just sitting in the sukkah. It's building the sukkah. It's also part of the mitzvah. How do we understand this increasingly broadening mitzvah? So here's what I want to maybe suggest. It's just a theory. Perhaps the path is as follows. Maybe. The mitzvah of yeshiva b'sukkah is not just a mitzvah technically sitting in the sukkah, but it's a bigger mitzvah. And the bigger mitzvah is not just about the act of sitting in the sukkah, but it's about transforming the yontif of sukkahs. It's about taking the holiday that we celebrate it and making it into a holiday that is constantly modified, that is kind of, that's entirely revolving around the notion of sukkah. Now, when we say the notion of sukkah, we don't just mean the act of the sukkah, but we mean the themes. Last time we talked about Anon Yaakovah, right? Or is sukkahs mamish? And the idea that HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves us, and emunah, and bitachon. All these crucial themes of the mitzvah of sukkah, it's not just about eating in the sukkah, it's not even just about sleeping in the sukkah, and learning in the sukkah, and schmoozing the sukkah, and building the sukkah. All of that together completely transforms the nature of the holiday. And this is not only true by sukkahs, I think it's true by other yom tovim as well. I'm going to give you just one more example, but I think there are many others as well. There's a lot of ambiguity when it comes to another upcoming holiday, and even sooner upcoming holiday, Rosh Hashanah. Tzkiyas Shofar. You guys ever hear the shir, the whole discussion about the nature of the mitzvah Tzkiyas Shofar? Okay? We did, I think.
Yeah.
Okay? What's the basic chakira about the mitzvah of Shofar? What's the classic chakira?
It's a
here. Anyone know? Oh, it's a mitzvah of Shmiya, or it's a mitzvah of Tzkiya. You know what? It's a great chakira. You know what the problem is? It doesn't work in the Makaras. And I'll tell you why. There are Mishnayos and Gemaros that make it very clear that it matters who blows the shofar. Right? For example, if it's a pure mitzvah shmia, right? Would it matter who blows? No, so it's about listening. Who cares who blows? But what does it say in the Mishnah? Chere shod v'katan, someone who's not halachically competent, can't blow the shofar. So the Sfasemis and the other Achorim say, well, you can't say it's a pure mitzvah shmia, because it matters who blows the shofar. Right? So you would say, okay, so it's a mitzvah skia. What's the problem with that? If it's purely mitzvah skia, does it matter how you hear the shofar? No. Shouldn't matter also, it's mitzvah skia. What else does it say in the Gemara? Right? Really, the Mishnayos as well. If you blow where is the puzzle? What place? What location is problematic to blow the shofar? Anyone know? Hatokeo, the soch, habor. Okay, what does that mean? You're blowing inside? A pit. Why? Because what do you hear?
An echo.
What?
An echo.
You're an echo. You don't hear the original sounds of the shofar. You hear an echo of the shofar. Hold on 1 second. If it's a mitzvah tzkiah, who cares where I'm blowing it? What difference does it make? Right? Echo, no echo? That modifies the shmiah, not the tzkiah. So if you're telling me that a chesho of a katan can't produce the sound, so that the tzkia matters, and you're telling me the shmia matters, because if I listen to an echo, that's problematic as well. It can't be pure tzkia, it can't be pure shmia, neither of these work. It's a problem. So I have a theory, and then someone told me that my own Rebbe said it, but I'm pretty sure I never heard it from him, that Rav Lichtenstein and Gosh had actually written this in our book, he sent me this article. So I always want to say that the pshat is it's not a mitzvah of shmia, it's not a mitzvah of tzkiya, that by combining some sort of tzkiya shofar with the shmia shofar, transform the day of Rosh Hashanah into what kind of day? What does the Torah call it? A yom? Okay, yom adin, but also, what's the lashon on the Torah as well? Yom hazikaron, but also? Zichron shrua, right? And also yom Pinchas. It's not just about the shmiah shofar, not just about the tzkiah shofar. The shmiah of the shofar represents the idea of tshuva, listening to the call of the shofar. The tzkiah shofar, that's maybe about Karnit and Kadosh Baruch Hu as our king. Or maybe it's a form of tefillah. We cry out to God, our tzkiah, to Kadosh Baruch Hu. It's not shmiah, it's not tzkiah. By engaging with the shofar through a combination of shmiah and tzkiah, what do we really do? We take the holiday, take the yom, we elevate it to something that is transformed. And I would argue that's true for Chag HaMatzos. There's a whole Torah about, well, is it just on the first night, or is it the whole 70s of mitzvah of matzah? Chag HaMatzos. You're taking the holiday, and that's why these mitzvahs are ambiguous. Can't define this one, can't define that way. Because it's not just about the ma'isa mitzvah in the narrow sense, it's about taking the holiday and elevating it. Making the sukkah, in our case, into the central aspect around which the entire Yom Tov revolves. It's not just Stam HaMaisa HaMitzvah. It is a Maisa HaMitzvah. And you have to make a bracha at some point. So maybe you make it when you go in. Maybe you make it when you eat. Maybe you're here. Maybe you make it there. Whatever it might be. But it's about more than just when you say the bracha. It's about the entire Yom Tov and about transforming it. You know what it says in its... Maybe you can even change the Yom Tov to some degree even before the Yom Tov starts. Maybe even when you're building something, when you're preparing for a Yom Tov, that also changes the nature of the yontif. It gives it a different quality. It says this sukkah is not just a mitzvah of Alma. It is the essence of this holiday. And all these themes, all these ideas that sukkah represents, it's not just about a maisa mitzvah, about changing my entire experience of this yontif. Maybe that's the pshat. So is it possible that it's not just, oh, basukos teshvu, about an hour maisa mitzvah? And maybe all this confusion, this ambiguity about what's the nature of the mitzvah, is it before and is it during? And if it's during, would you make the bracha? Maybe all of that has to do with the idea of the nature of this mitzvah. It's not stam a maisa mitzvah. There are two mitzvahs. There are mitzvahs that have significance in their own act, and there are mitzvahs that when you perform them, they have a wider impact and they are transformative. Maybe sukkah, and maybe many of the mitzvahs in different Yom Tovim are not just about the maisa mitzvah alone, but about transforming the day. So my bracha for all of us for a long time off, I know it's not hachana for sukkahs, but my bracha is that when we actually get there, we should all be zeuche to a little bit of chag ha-sukkos ta'aselecha, that it should be that the Yom Tovim that we celebrate are not just maisa mitzvah, but they are transformative for the holiday, and thereby transformative for us. So it's just a... perhaps a chiddush. Let me know what you think. Tell me if you think it's MS or not.
And therefore, and then you would have to bless on everything you do.
I'm not going to pass get halacha lemaisa. I think it explains the. In other words, I'm saying in a shir biyun, not halacha lemaisa. We're giving halacha lemaisa shir. I'm not. I wouldn't suggest lemaisa necessarily that we make the bracha on those broader occasions. But I would say two things. I would say number one, if a posig told me that he paskin that a person could make a bracha in other circumstances between achilah shtiyah, I think that that posig would be great. Like I think that there's real halachic basis in a very profound kind of way for such a position. Number one. Number two, what I'm saying is we shouldn't be so beholden to sort of just the halacha l'maisa psak. We should recognize that the ga'onim, that the rishonim, the achronim, they saw it more broadly. They understood the fact that we say the birchas mitzvah on one specific narrow act shouldn't confine our understanding of the mitzvah. Sometimes it's much broader. Halacha l'maisa, that could have ramifications, and just in terms of our understanding. What the experience is all about, what the mitzvah is all about, it's important to look beyond that and to get kind of a broader understanding of what really the mitzvah is all about, which is what we sought to accomplish today. Shkoyach.